This last year has been a rather interesting year for Michelle and I, and I know many of you in your own ways, but we all see our own circumstance because we live it personally. Over the last 12 months, Grandma died. If you go back a year, basically, Grandpa moved in with us and then returned to services after over 30 years of not attending with the Church of God. Over the course of the 12 months, there were various trips to Africa and trips to French Africa, which means I couldn't speak the language when I got there. That was unique. There were health issues in our family, another death in the family besides Grandma, financial issues as Grandpa settled and various circumstances had to be put in place, and plain old just issues, which we all have on a normal basis. Michelle took a leave of absence from her job because her obligation and focus necessarily had to change. In more recent times, Derek graduated from Gonzaga. I went on the council. I resigned from the Challenger program as a result. That'll take a year to catch up because we have to get through the current program, and then I'll step aside on there. And also the index was finished. Now, for our lives and our family in 12 months, those were a lot of events. Everyone faces their own challenges, and quite frankly, few of us know what each other of us is walking through. You have to almost live your own life to understand. God knows, though, what we're walking through, and we know that He knows, and so sometimes we're asking Him why. We question God why because of the personal impact of what we face. Why me, Lord? Then we say, well, what am I supposed to be learning? And then we say, well, I hope I learn it quick so that I can get on with my life, get on and go forward. Jeremiah 29, verse number 10, is a passage where God is speaking through Jeremiah to the Jews who had gone into captivity. He obviously punished them for their sins. He obviously sent them into captivity, which is not where they wanted to be. But then He responded through Jeremiah in response to their questions. Well, why me, Lord? Or what is it I'm supposed to be learning? I hope I learn it soon. Because they would have asked some of those very same things. So Jeremiah 29, verse 10, it says, after 70 years are completed at Babylon, I'll visit you and perform my good will toward you, and I will cause you to return to this place. I know the thoughts that I think toward you. And the implication is they were questioning God as to why He was allowing them to be punished in this way. And God says, don't impute to me, and again, I'm using some of my word here, my own words, but don't impute to me some evil intent. He says, I know my thoughts. He says, they are thoughts of peace and not evil, to give you a future and hope. God says, I am actually on your side. I'm trying to help you. Then you will call upon me and go and pray to me, and I will listen to you, because then they would come to repentance, and He would bring them back into the land. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. And I will be found by you, says the Lord. I will bring you back from your captivity. I'll gather you from all the nations and from all the places that I have driven you. It says, I will bring you to the place from which I caused you to be carried away captive. God says, I know my mind and my thoughts are for good and for peace. Yet when we go through trial and test and struggle, sometimes we do. We ask God, well, what's up? Why me? Why haven't you answered my prayers? I need something right away. On this last trip, I was able to ordain Moise Mabou, elder in Cameroon. Michelle has a picture posted on the board in the back of Mr. and Mrs. Mabou. Very nice shot and wonderful people. Mabou had been told by his former pastor that he would not be able to serve the church as an elder, that was not what his opportunity would be. But Mabou had been told by his former pastor that God just wasn't going to use him in that way. Couldn't be an elder. Mabou now is an elder. He's a pastor. He's a pastor of three congregations in two countries. So I'm not going to second guess what the past might have been. I wasn't there. But I know the present. And the present is he is indeed a servant of God, and I believe he will serve God in a mighty way. God works with each of us perfectly. We go through trial, struggle at times. We go through times when we have to wait and be patient. And yet God works with us perfectly. Doesn't mean everything that happens he personally has done. It does mean all things work together for good within God's will, within his purpose. Isaiah 40 is a passage, starting in verse number 18, that describes God, compares God to us in the way that we sometimes look at him. And he says, you know, I'm not an idol. I'm not a piece of wood. You didn't carve me with your hands. I'm not here because you willed it. You're here because I willed it. Isaiah 40 and verse 18. He says, who then to will you liken God? What likeness will you compare to him? The workman molds a graven image. The goldsmith overspreads it with gold. Silversmith casts silver chains. Whoever's too impoverished for such a contribution chooses a tree that will not rot. In other words, they carve up an image. It's that God says, you're going to compare me to that? Verse 21, have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth. God isn't down here looking up. He's up there looking down in that sense. And its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. Stretches out the heaven like a curtain, spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth useless. Verse 25, to whom then will you liken me, or to whom shall I be equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things, who brings out the host by number, calls them by name, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one is missing. He's trying to draw a contrast to we need to be willing to look to God, to recognize his power and majesty. And when we know that his heart looks to us for good and for peace, that he is indeed seeking to bless us and to guide us and to direct us in his ways. Verse 28, have you not known, have you not heard, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. There's no searching out of his understanding. We can't see him fully as he is. But he gives power to the weak. To those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary. The young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They'll mount up on wing or with wings like eagles. They'll run and not be weary. They'll walk and not faint. So it's a reminder to recognize that in the midst of the things that we face and walk through, that God is with us. He's on our side. He's there for our best purposes. And at times, quite frankly, maybe we question that. And we sometimes need to be reminded of his grace. When I first went to visit the Northern Congregation in Cameroon in Yagua, I showed a picture when I came back, and they were meeting in a kind of a lean-to outside of one of the members' homes. And it was pretty rudimentary, and sticks and some branches over the top. It just was a very simple means. And I mentioned that I felt that was, quite frankly, under the circumstances, improper. And I gave the context to why I thought it so. And the honest answer is, before I walked out of the congregation hall down in Kennewick, members had come up and said, we're going to see that that is covered and that will be repaired, before I could even leave the room. But that wasn't the end of it, because that went out as well on a cybercast, and others said, well, I'd like to help also, and someone said, well, I'd like to help as well. So what happened as a result is there were donations that came in that were specifically dedicated to the building and the assets and trying to resolve this situation, and we took all of that plus additional, and we built Yagua a church hall. Now, my concept was just to build them a shelter. They'd had a shelter, they needed a better one. Mabu, you have to kind of watch it. If you ask for two, he'll take three. I've mentioned that. And so what he did was I started with a shelter, and then he built a hall. He said, you know, it's interesting, you go up to Yagua, the soil, they can make bricks out of that soil. We're not talking just mud bricks for the sun, we're talking fired bricks. Labor's cheap over there in Africa, and dirt's free. And they literally, he had them fire bricks so that he could brick in the sides of this hall. He designed it so. And it's got windows and doors, and it's got quite a little piece of property that it's on. And he did a wonderful job, and we sent the additional monies over to see that those things would get done. On our last trip, though, we now have, Mabu has mentioned that, well, we have given feast allotment each year now to the Yagwa congregation. And he says, I would like the feast allotment sent early this year, like in about 2 weeks. And he said, what I want to do now is I want to build some little huts around the outside of the church hall. And he said, after those huts are built, you'll not need to ever send a feast allotment to Yagwa again. So what he's going to do, he's going to fire more bricks and build some of the local native-style huts for sleeping quarters. And the hall at night during the feast can be put off with some curtains, and they can sleep, and then they can sleep in the huts and put in an outdoor toilet as such. And then he's going to build a room on the back of the hall for himself. And the point is, when he said, Yagwa needs more time, they need more direction, they need someone who has been in the church and can guide and direct and help them in terms of the development of leadership in the congregation. He says, I need to spend more time there myself. I said, fine. So he's going to build a room on the back of the hall where he can stay so that it doesn't take now a hotel bill if he stays in the area for a longer period of time. But it's an amazing thing. With what started out as just a problem, now it's turned into a feast site. And it is local. They'll just use it themselves. People are not going to be transferring in to Yagwa, generally speaking. But there's room now for what we would have normally sent over just to help. We'll pay for the facility, the rest of it, and in the future there'll be no further need. So it worked out in a remarkable way. But as I said, it goes beyond that. The money that then came in as a result was also in excess of our needs for the building, and many of those people just said, look, use this for West Africa. Use this in whatever way you need. And so we started to then fund the youth camp programs. We funded the Ghana program out of that money, and we sent over tents and ground pads and equipment so that they could move into a botanical park and set up and have activities for their young people, including some of the French young people that Mabu went up and picked up and brought over for the program. Now we're going to do the very same thing for Douala in Cameroon. We have a youth camp there. The youth camp used to, you can call it a camp. It was something, it was a program, I'll give it that much. There's a sports facility in Douala that basically I would describe as a mosquito-infested swamp. It is a sports facility run by the army that does have a track running around the swamp in the middle. And if you were to camp there at night, even the local staff said, well, there's going to certainly be a lot of mosquitoes. So that really didn't sound like a very good idea. The young people that would go to the camp would then come back to the church hall, and they would all bed down, stay in the hall, and then they would transport out to this sports facility day by day. While we were there on this trip, Mabu took me over to the English side of Cameroon. There's a section of Cameroon that speaks English, and I always like that because when we're on the French side, he has to speak for me. We're on the English side, now I'm the hero. You know, let me help you with that, Mabu. So I like going over to the English side, but it's also very, very beautiful, and it's right on the coast, and there's a botanical park on the English side. And so Mabu is now moving the youth camp so that it will actually become a camp, because we've been hauling tents and ground pads and gear over, and we're going to actually camp in the botanical park, right in one of the seating sections where they have rock seats, and in a very, very beautiful section. And the young people are going to have a chance to go out and be in nature in their camp as well. But that came in as a result. But it didn't end there, because again, now we're looking at Kinshasa. And Mabu said, well, you know, Kinshasa needs some attention as well. He goes there 4 times a year. But a hotel in Kinshasa is $100 a night. That is not an expensive hotel. This is Congo, okay? You don't just go out and bed down on the street. And the big hotels are way, way more money than that. The international hotels run anywhere $300 to $400 a night. And so $100 a night was the least expensive hotel that we could find that was in the area that was still safe enough that it was secure. So when Mabu stays there, you're knocking off $100 a night on his hotel, and then you're paying the local congregation $100 a month to rent a facility. And Mabu said, we need to build them a hall. And so a member actually gave us some land. It's much smaller, it's a big city, but enough to put a hall up for them as well. And Mabu's going to put a room on the back of that, and then he'll stay there. We will literally pay the cost of the hall in savings to Mabu's visits and not having to then rent property within a year, year and a half at the most. And then we're covered as well. So there's been some remarkable blessings and benefits that came out of what appeared to be a real serious problem, but it began to solve a series of issues along the way. The other thing we needed was, in Congo, we have to have an address for the church to register. Well, an address, where are you going to be? Well, now we're going to have an address. I have a piece of property with an address. The church hall will be the church office as well. Michelle has taken then the Sabbath school lessons and turned those into festival lessons. And now all of West Africa is going to have basically festival lessons in the French areas. They're all translated into French, and it's things they've just never had before. And that's all, we've been shipping that on each trip and in our luggage. And so there's a lot of things that are really beneficial that have taken place, and there's a lot of gain over there, and it's exciting to see. How many years did some of those people wait for those things? How long did Yagwa meet out under sticks and branches? You know, Kinshasa, Congo did not have the kind of care and attention. They had a leader who was not even faithful to the church. They had a leader who was taking the funds that came in and enriching himself, and the brethren themselves were not receiving the benefits. But God intervened in time. Sometimes what God really wants to see is if we will literally look to him and trust him. Will we wait on him? Will we endure for him? Not just, is it okay right now, but are we going to stay there and be there and be around then when we give God time to intercede on his timing? Look at 2 Samuel chapter 22. It's really exciting to me to see some of the progress and changes. Mabu there now is an elder, can anoint. There was no elder local to that area. There has never been an elder local, at least in recent years. I don't know what would go back 20, but in terms of recent years, we've not had that kind of blessing in that area. But this is a praise, a song of for God's deliverance. Verse 1, 2 Samuel 22, says, David spoke to the Lord the words of this song on the day when the Lord had delivered him from the hand of his enemies and from the hand of Saul. So he's rejoicing before God at God delivering him. Now, it might not have sounded quite the same when David was running for his life, when he was hiding in a cave, when Saul was hot in pursuit, and he's crying out to God to intervene. Where are you? What are you waiting for? Okay? Why me, Lord? And yet now this is the end result. This is what we wait on. This is what we trust God for. Verse 2. He said, the Lord is my rock and my fortress, my deliverer. The God of my strength, in him I will trust. My shield and the horn of my salvation. My stronghold and my refuge, my Savior, you save me from violence. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised, so I shall be saved from my enemies. When the waves of death encompassed me, the floods of ungodliness made me afraid. The sorrows of the grave or Sheol surrounded me. The snares of death confronted me. He's admitting that there were very hard times along the way. In my distress, I called upon the Lord and cried to my God. He heard my voice in his temple, and my cry entered his ears. If you go on down to verse number 17, it says, he sent from above, and he took me. He drew me out of many waters. He delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support. He also brought me out into a broad place. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Verse 29. It says, you are my lamp, O Lord. The Lord shall enlighten my darkness. By you I can run against a troop. By my God I can leap over a wall. As for God, his way is perfect. And isn't that part of the point? God is perfect. The way he works with us according to our calling is perfect. He intervenes at the perfect time. He intervenes in the perfect way. And when we're crying out, it's like when David is running down between the rocks for his life. But when God saves him, then he turns around and praises God again. But it says, as for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is proven. He is a shield to all who trust in him. For who is God except the Lord, and who is a rock except our God? God is my strength and power. He makes my way perfect. And that's the point. God is perfect. He's making us perfect. We are taking on God. And so it just says, he makes my way perfect as well. He makes my feet like the feet of deer, sets me in high places, teaches my hands to make war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. Okay, so David went to war, and we don't go to war, but we war against spiritual darkness in this life, spiritual forces. But God says that he makes our ways perfect as well. The way he works with us, the things he does for us, the blessings he gives us are according to his perfect will. You remember the story of Grandpa's listening, and you remember the story of Grandpa's $5 jacket. We went down to the thrift store. Grandpa didn't want to spend a lot of money. He needed some suits to wear to church. He was now returning to church to attend, and he wanted to look nice. And so we went down to a thrift store and walked in and walked over to the suits and pulled off this coat and put it on Grandpa, and it fit perfect. It was brand new, Men's Warehouse, buttons still in the pocket, never been cleaned. Who knows, somebody bought it or given to them or what happened, and they put it on the rack and returned it to a thrift store in that sense, and Grandpa happened to walk in the door. That was a very, very nice coat, all wool coat. So we went to Men's Warehouse, and I showed him the label and the jacket so that he would feel he had a good deal for $5, you know. Six might have been just a little too much, you know, for Grandpa under those circumstances. Bought a nice pair of slacks to go with it. Had it all fitted, you know, you tailor the waist and make sure the length is right, and it looked very nice. Gray slacks and his black coat, and then I see you would borrow, I would start to say steal, but borrow one of my ties, and then he loved it and came to church. Now, Grandpa wanted some slacks more recently to wear in the hospice and as he comes around and to look nice. And you know, it was very hard before my trip, and I kept getting busy, and finally the last day, I'm leaving the very next day, this is my last day, and I said, I'm going to have to go with Grandpa, we're going shopping. I said, I just got to, I'm leaving, I just can't walk away. So I went, got Grandpa, told him I was coming, he rested all morning, getting up his strength, and then we went to the mall. I'm pushing him around in a wheelchair, and he's looking, and we're finding the pants he wants. We bought like three pair of nice slacks. Fit him just perfect. He really liked him. Went back home, showed some of the nurses, you know. Hung up in his closet. And the closet now, with three more pair of pants, is a little full. Now, to tie you into this story, it's kind of wandering a bit, but to tie you into this story, when I first talked to Mabu about ordaining him an elder, I mean, I haven't been and seen all of Mabu's wardrobe, but the fact is, he would have liked to have had a suit when he was ordained that would be a nice suit, that, and maybe I could find something to bring as a gift, and we talked about it a little bit. And I looked at Mabu, he's about Grandpa's size, and so once in a while when we're out shopping, I got Grandpa with me as my fitting, whatever you use for that thing, and I'm trying stuff on Grandpa, and we never really found something that worked, and then when I'm by myself, I'd go in thrift store, pick up luggage, and I'd look at the suits. And I'd put it on and see if it was enough bigger than me, and that's hard to say, you know, and then the pants would be worn out. So I hadn't found anything. I'm leaving in one day. Grandpa needs clothes. So we got his slacks, and went back to his room and hung them up, and Grandpa said, you know, I don't need all those suits in there anymore, because he doesn't come to church here now. He has to stay there for services. And I reached into his closet and I pulled out the hanger that had the black $5 coat on it and his gray wool slacks that he had fitted to himself. And I says, you like this one? He says, yeah, you might as well take that back to the house. I looked at it and I said, well, Grandpa, how about if I just take it with me to Cameroon? I said, I'd like to give it to Mabu. And I said, honestly, I think it'll be pretty close fit. And Grandpa got really excited. He said, yes, you know, what a great thing to do. It really, he got very excited that this would have utility to it. So I packed it up, put it in my luggage, and I took it to Mabu. And when I got there, I pulled it out. I said, Mabu, put on this jacket. He put on the jacket. Perfect. I said, put on the pants. Put on the pants. Perfect. The sleeve was perfect. The shoulder was perfect. The waist was perfect. The pants fit. You didn't have to take them up. The length was perfect. Mabu is exactly Grandpa in a younger version. And not only that, the last time we were there, Mabu and I were talking. They were, you know, I want to have in Cameroon what we have in Nigeria, and I want Ghana to have the same thing. I want to have youth programs, young adult programs, someday if we can, a challenger program. But I said, you know, Mabu, you're going to have to lose a little weight. I said, the challenger program is for athletes. So I came back, he says, I've been on a special diet. And he'd actually thinned up a little bit. And he thinned up just exactly enough that when I gave him Grandpa's outfit, it fit. Now, what are the odds of that? But anyway, God does things perfectly. And when he intervenes in exactly the right way. So when Grandpa needed a coat and God was going to bless him in that way, we walk in for $5 and get a brand new, nice quality coat off the rack. And then when Grandpa doesn't need it anymore and Mabu would like to have a coat, it just happens to fit him perfectly as well. And he was so pleased with it. It was exciting. It really was. After he was ordained and we were doing the anointings, and he's laying on hands, and I'm assisting him. I said, Mabu, you're going to anoint. I will assist you. He's down on his knees in these great pants, and you could tell he's trying to be careful, you know, because he's got these really nice slacks on. And afterwards, he just said, you know, I'm going to put these away. I want to keep them. These are nice. And they are. But that was all a gift and God's blessing. But he blessed them both, I would have to say, in a perfect way. So some things just happen to us. It's true, time and chance happens to all. But even time and chance happens within God's will and not outside of it. So that even those things that happen are still things where God is working with us in a perfect way. We're not going to know when God necessarily intervenes in every case and when something just happened. But the fact is, how we look at that and what our perspective is very important. The bread, in France, they have two kinds of bread. They have bread, just plain bread, and then they have English bread. What shape do you think English bread is? It's square. Okay, now in the United States, we basically have two kinds of bread. I mean, there's artisan bread and stuff, but what we call bread is square, and then we have French bread, which is kind of a loaf and round. So I thought it was funny that over there, bread is round, and over here, bread is square, and there's English bread and French bread, depending on which side you're on. So we had regular bread, which was French bread, and rolls, and sometimes for breakfast. And because we stay in the hall and eat there, and the meals are sometimes brought over, sometimes we just take bread and eat or snack over there. So Mabu made us sandwiches a couple times. And he'd break open a roll of French bread, and then he'd make us a sandwich, and he'd hand this sandwich to me. And I kind of looked at it. I didn't say anything because it's impolite to complain. But the word I came up with was beef mush on the bread. Here's a beef mush sandwich. And it, you know, it actually looked to me like something just a little bit past a hot dog going the other way. Now, Mabu said he's going to listen to this sermon. He always does when I get home, so I have to pick my words carefully. But That was the word. I figured, okay, another beef mush sandwich. And it didn't taste too bad. It was okay. I've eaten a lot of stuff in Africa that was less than that. But I never quite looked forward to it. I just figured, okay, that's what it's going to be. Well, then one day toward the end of the trip, Mabu comes in with the can that this beef mush comes out of and set it down. I could actually look and see what it was called. It's called pâté. Oh, man. I had no idea. You know, I mean, this stuff is hoity-toity. I mean, pâté. So all of a sudden, my sandwich tasted better. You know, it wasn't mush after all. This is a very exclusive type of a product, pâté, you know. And so it actually tasted better once I saw what it was. Now, my circumstances didn't change. The only thing that changed was my perspective. And that's important. I think it's important to understand. They keep the Feast of Tabernacles in Kenya in tents, and they have a great rejoicing. And we used to keep the Feast of Tabernacles in Big Sandy, Texas in tents, and we had a great rejoicing. Well, some of us, some people got rained out actually, but we did. We had a great time, and it was intense. Now, if you went to the feast this year and there would be no room at the inn and they put you in a tent, would you have a great rejoicing? Well, you'd probably be really, really disappointed. That's not what you were counting on. And again, at times, it's just a matter of perspective. When Paul said that he had learned to be content, he did not say that his circumstances had improved, but he had learned to have a proper perspective. So how we look at things and the way we process is very important in terms of how we then look at God and what he is doing or needs to do in the future. Psalm 37, verse number 7. It says, "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm." Now, it's easy to say that, but it's hard to maybe sometimes apply that. But we still strive and we try to move in that direction. It only causes you to be worse off than you were. Evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Yet for a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. It's not resolved yet. Indeed, you will look diligently for his place, and it shall be no more. The meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Now, if we could go back over to Isaiah in verse chapter 26. Again, just a reminder of the fact that God is on our side. He wants us to remember and be encouraged by that. But Isaiah 26 and verse number 3 says, "You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you." Again, is that not a matter of perspective? What is it that we are focused on? "You keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on you, because he trusts in you. Trust in the Lord forever, for Yah, the Lord, is everlasting strength. Brings down those who dwell on high, the lofty city, he lays it low to the ground, brings it down to the dust. The foot shall tread it down, the feet of the poor, and the steps of the needy." So God is going to exalt his people, who in this society sometimes, in this world, are not the ones who are in power or authority. And many times it is in very limited circumstances. There have been a number of times in our life, Michelle and I, our family's life, when things worked out in such a way when we could clearly see God's hands. As I said, we won't always know. But there's some times that are just too obvious. Grandpa getting that suit, sending it over in a fitting Mabu. To me, that was just too obvious. That was God's hand. I believe it so. When we lived in Texas, going back Michelle came up to me one time before we were heading out for the feast, and she said, well, can I buy a new dress for the feast this year? And I said, honey, I really don't think so. Now, the fact is, back then, if you'd been in the ministry a long time and you came in and rose up through some of what we then used as ranks, I think you did fairly well. And if you came into the ministry late and you were at the very bottom of the pile, you did very poorly, to be honest. And things were very tight. So even going to the feast, when I had to sit down and say, well, it's going to cost this much to go and we have to stay in a place and take care of Bill, I said, honey, I it's just not there. And she said, okay, that's fine. Went for a walk down the street, block and a half down the street, and walked by, and there was a lady that was putting out and organizing some things for a yard sale. And it wasn't open yet, but Michelle said hi, and we're neighbors, and so they were talking a bit, and the lady says, well, come on over and see what's here. And Michelle walked over in the garage, and here's a whole rack of dresses. Now, the lady was fairly comfortable financially, and Michelle describes it as essentially, you know, if like a button fell off, you went and bought a new dress. And the lady worked, and she had funds, and she wanted nice things. So she would rotate through, and Michelle began to look at the dresses, and guess what? They were her size. Whole rack was her size. And she came running back to Mark, you know, and they were like $10 a piece. And they were nice dresses. And so I said, honey, there's no way in the world we're going to pass that one, right? All right, just go get whatever you want. I don't care. You'll never do worse than that. So, never do better than that. I think she picked up 7-8 dresses, $10 a piece. Every one of them fit her size. They looked nice. They were high-quality dresses. And she got them all for less than the price of the one that I said we didn't have the money to pay. Now, to me, that's just not time and chance. To me, that's God's hand saying, you know what? All right, I understand. You're not in a position to take care of this. Let me handle this. Watch this, you know. And so they hadn't even opened yet. It wasn't like you went by and it was over. When we then moved later to Spokane here, Michelle had the problems with her knees over years. We've been to doctors and stuff. And when our children were young, Michelle volunteered in the schools and worked in their classrooms to help out. And so we didn't have a side job. There was no money coming in addition. And so again, matters are, we have to be a little careful. When we came in here, Perry and Jerry and Jeff came down and built me an office. You know, put up the framing and came in and hung all the sheetrock and built the bookcases and stuff. And if they wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have had an office. I mean, there was no way. And they came in and kind of put things in order, and I've always appreciated that. But so Michelle's over at the school, and she has a limp. And she's limping, she's in a lot of pain from her knee, and there was a lady over at the school that came up and asked her, and she says, well, hi, you know, not somebody we knew by maybe by sight, but she says, I see that you're kind of limping there, what's wrong? And Michelle told her, she says, well, why don't you get it taken care of? And Michelle says, well, we will someday, but right now, you know, the funds aren't really there for us, and we have insurance, but there's deductibles and co-pays and stuff, you know, we were not saving money when we moved here either. I mean, there was nothing setting aside. Just getting into the house, getting it set up, and getting in place was all we had. In fact, I think we literally bought that house with our last dollar. I mean, it was really, if you'd have raised the price, we just said, can't do it. So it's not like we were bad off. We live in a nice place, but it took everything to get there. So anyway, the lady said, well, why don't you come over and see me? I'd like to have lunch with you. Come by my house. And they're just a block or so behind us. And Michelle said, fine. Went over to the house one day, and the lady said, look, my husband and I sold our business when we moved here, and we set aside some of the money to help people to serve God and to give to him. And as, you know, as it's described, she said, you know, God kind of let me know that he wants us to help you. I go, man, thank you, God. Thanks for getting the message over, you know. But it was amazing. We did not know this person. And so she told asked Michelle, well, what kind of plan do you have? She said, well, we got insurance, and like I said, there's deductible and co-pays and various things. And the lady said, look, get your surgery. I think the first was orthoscopic on both knees. It was done, and been through a series since. But she says, get your surgery, and let all the bills be covered that can be covered. And then she said, bring me the ones that remain. Michelle went and had the surgery done and did what she said, let insurance cover everything it would cover, and then took what's left and showed her what the bills were. And she went over and she says, well, that's just almost exactly the amount we set aside for you. Literally, not to the dollar, but that was the amount. That was the amount they estimated, and it was what they set aside. They paid every penny. It's not like we became personal friends. It was they worked together at school. We had a social relationship. Eventually they moved and went on. We've never heard from them since. But they just walked in the door, and it was exactly what we would have needed but couldn't do on our own. And God says, Dick, let me handle this. All right, let me take care of this. Now, there was a lot of limping around until that happened. And when we could not set the money aside out of our own budget, there was a lot of doubt in your mind sometimes as to what you were going to do to get this repaired or fixed when the time came. And we didn't know those things. There were times when God was there taking care of us, and we were asking him, well, aren't you listening? Haven't you heard? Don't you know what our needs are here? And God says, yeah, I know, I know. Just hang on there, all right. We're gonna make this work. So, yes, we suffer at times, and we suffer in ways that James talks about. Challenger program this summer, Matthew Fenchel is the director, and he picked the book of James to represent. We're going to teach the book of James in the program. And the theme of the program is let patience have its perfect work. Perfect work. Think about that. The trial, the struggle, what God allows us to walk through gets us where God wants us to be. And God is perfect, and he works with us in a perfect way. So it isn't always where we wanted to go or what we thought we needed, but God's in control, and he knows what it is that he wants to do. So there's so many times that God is right there waiting, and he allows us sometimes to struggle and squirm, but there's benefit. It says, be patient. Let the work be done. Don't begrudge the fact that God chooses to intervene on his own timing and not necessarily our own. So the Bible is full of examples of Moses and those of faith and Abraham and Sarah, and all the way through there's these examples of God's servants, so that we can look at that and be reminded that what indeed God is doing. Look at 2 Timothy 3 and verse 16. You know, Mabuh was told that he could never serve as an elder, that he would never be able to be used in that way. And he just continued to serve in the way that he could and the way that he did. But the time came when God was able to use him just the same. In fact, incredibly, by God's grace, I have someone who works with Cameroon and Congo, Mabuh. I have someone who works with Nigeria and Benin, Dari. I have someone who works with Ghana and Togo, Fred. And it allows me to function at a way where I can intercede and travel and try to contribute, but I have individuals who have responsibility that take that seriously all along the way. The programs are coming up. The leadership development is in process. The youth camps, the activities, the gear, the church buildings that are being built, not just so that we can scatter churches all over Africa. That wasn't my goal. These are in places of specific need. When Oweri did not have any funds of their own, and some of you will remember, we raised some funds here in this congregation, and I took them to Oweri, and we bought them a machine that processes the palm nut kernels at the end of the process, cracks it, and inside is a meat that they use for like soaps or cosmetics. It has an oil in it, and they can crack that and sell that for local product. So in Oweri's case, we did not buy them a building. Instead of giving them a fish, we gave them a boat. And we said, here's your machine. It's on a cement floor. It's got a diesel engine, diesel or gas, I don't remember. It's got a roof and tin, and it runs, and they can bring this in. And now, you know what? How much they use it and how much gain they get out of it is up to them. But they have the means to make some increase. And so we've done things differently in different places based on what the best option would be. But again, 2 Timothy 3, verse number 16. All scripture is given by inspiration of God. It's profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, which means all of those examples, all of those life stories, all of the stories of God's intervention and protection. It says that the man of God may be complete, because we're incomplete, and God is working with us to the finish, thoroughly equipped for every good work. And so God is actually trying to work with us to completion, and we have to be willing to walk along that way and finish the process to go and face those things. So what is it then we're supposed to be learning? We're supposed to be learning that God's ways are perfect and that he wants our ways to be perfect as well. And we look at God's grace in our life at baptism, and he forgives us and we are saved. And we look at God's grace in our lives in the process of overcoming, and it says that we are being saved. And we look at God's grace in the sense of salvation in the resurrection, and he says those who endure to the end will be saved. So it's a process that begins in God's call, goes through our whole process of living before God in this life, and ends in the resurrection when this body dies and we rise to newness of life. So what is it we're supposed to be learning? We're supposed to be learning that God is perfect and that he's striving to make us perfect as well.